And everyone, please give a warm welcome to Raleigh, our speaker tonight.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Raleigh, and I'm not a normal drinker. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Raleigh. I'd
like to thank this young lady for asking me to, I was going to say David, but he's not here. Asking me to speak. And it's always a pleasure to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an honor for me to be up here speaking with you guys about my experience, strength, and hope. My sobriety date is August 14, 1986. I got sober a long time ago. But I keep coming to AA because AA is my life. AA saved my life. God saved my life, period. So that's why I keep coming, and that's why I do things like this for AA, to help. Maybe I can help one person in this room tonight, and if that's what I do, that's what I'm here for, to help one person, or all of you, if that's what it takes. But that's what I'm here for. So like most of you all, I didn't get here on a winning streak. I drank a little too much. You know, I got my first taste of alcohol when I was a young child. My parents were Catholic. They brought me to church every week. And they used to, my father was a self-made millionaire, so he used to have card parties at the house all the time. And they would drink, and they would put all the kids in the living room and turn on the TV, and they would shut the door, and they would party and play cards all night. One morning, I woke up earlier than all the parents did, and my parents did, and there was a little glass on the top of it. And I could barely reach it, but I grabbed it and I drank it. Oh my God, the nastiest thing I've ever tasted in my life. I think it was either vodka or tequila, but I didn't like it. So I didn't like the taste of alcohol at all. Going through the years, I played a lot of hockey when I was a kid. I was very good at it. I was very athletic. I was good at all the sports that I played and I was great at. Fast forward to 12 years old now. Haven't touched drop alcohol since that one shot. My buddies and I decided, well, let's try this drinking stuff. Maybe the weekends will be a little better if we start drinking. So back then we used to get allowances. I don't know if you guys remember that, the old guys. Like, we used to get allowances. Our parents used to give us allowances. We pulled all our allowance together and we'd go get beer. We'd get guys that were 21 years old or 18 back then. It was 18 back then to buy us beer. And we'd go up to the park and we'd drink. So we probably had a six pack, and you know, that was okay at the beginning, but it wasn't doing what I thought it would do. So we tried other things. We heard about people poking holes in the bottom of cans and stuff like that, and shotgunning, so we tried that. Man, if you shotgun six beers, I'm telling you, your mind's gonna be altered. So we did that. About a year, we did that. Then when I was 13 years old, we decided to get into the hard liquor. And we found out that at the liquor store, you could buy mixed drinks. You could buy strawberry daiquiris or gin and tonic you could buy. It was already pre-mixed. You buy bottles of it. Screwdrivers. They didn't have no exotic drinks. The most exotic drink they had when I was drinking was a slippery nipple. And they didn't have no orgasms or any of that stuff. You know? So it was just boom. You know, like a... So, 13 years old, and I'm drinking hard liquor already. And I'm already becoming a blackout drinker, puking, getting up in the morning sick of the dog, trying to work my way through the day. And I was basically a weekend drinker, okay? So, when I was 15 years old, I was playing JV basketball for the Berlin High School basketball team, and also varsity at 13 years old, at 15 years old. And I was averaging about 28 points a game. And one of the weekend games that we had against Stevens High School. There was a couple of black kids on the team, and they were warming up, and they were dunking the ball on us. I said, oh boy, it's gonna be fun. And there were a couple of college scouts in the stands watching us. And I didn't know that they were there to watch me play. And I scored like 62 points in two games, and we blew the guys away. They couldn't run like us, man. I didn't smoke cigarettes or nothing. I didn't drink. I was up and down the court like a... That summer, it was 2 weeks into that summer, we were going out with my friends. We were coming back from Dunkin' Donuts. We were walking on the sidewalk, me, my brother, and another friend. And we were going to a guy's house. We were planning to drink, and we were planning to meet up with some girls later. But God had a different plan. He put a Corvette in my path, doing 95 miles an hour, and broke both my legs. I ended up in intensive care, and I was in the hospital for 38 days. you guys ain't gonna believe me, but I had an out-of-body experience, and I see myself in that hospital bed. And then, as soon as that, I seen that, I got put back into my body, and I woke up. I was in a coma for 2 weeks. And all I could hear was babies crying, and it woke me up. So, I mean, at the foot of my bed was a priest, my mother and father, my grandparents, my girlfriend, and the priest was reading a prayer. And I asked my father years later, I said, what was he reading? Was he reading me my last rites? Are you guys getting ready to pull the plug on me? He said, no, he was reading you a living prayer. That's what my dad told me. He never wanted to tell me the truth, my father. But they were getting ready to let me go, but I came out of it. So, being that I was a son of a multimillionaire, and he pretty much owned the whole town, had the sheriff in his back pocket, the police department in his back pocket, everybody in his back pocket, Rolly was able to do anything. So at 15, that's when I really hit it hard. We lived right across the street from a package store, and every day I would see these guys walk out with cases of beer. They were walking. I said, I gotta get those guys to my house. My father had set up a whole apartment for us downstairs in his house. We had a refrigerator. It was like a whole house downstairs. And he bought a couple hospital beds. Me and my brother both I was in a wheelchair for like a year. But he could walk around. He had two broken ankles. I had two broken legs. I had casts up to here, both legs. So, and then he bought me a brand new foosball table. I don't know if any of y'all ever played foosball, but he bought me the state-of-the-art, best money could buy foosball table at the time. And we set it up in the kitchen area, and away we went. So I had something to play now in my house. So these guys that were walking with cases of beer, I invited them over. Hey, why don't you come over and play some foosball? Sure, they came right over, they put all their beer in my fridge, and away we went. So I was going to school. I the rest of my high school years I was in cast, and I would get out at 12 o'clock every day, get home, and the party would start. We'd drink all day, all night, get up in the morning, go to school, couldn't wait to get home so I could start drinking. That was at 16 years old. I turned 16, the accident happened June 25th, my birthday's in August, so I turned 16 later on that summer. Had a huge party, girls over there. Rolly, sweet 16, never been kissed. I was kissed by 100 girls that day. That's when the party really took over. And by the time I turned 18 years old and I had every cast gone on me, I was a full-blown alcoholic. And I couldn't stop. And my father got me a great job, worked for one of his friends, who was also a millionaire. And I was driving truck for Isaacson Structural Steel. Now this place of work that I was working at was an alcoholic's dream, because they had two Coke machines in that building. One was full of soda and the other one was full of beer. And they told us, if you work overtime, you can drink. So guess who worked overtime every night? Me. And being an alcoholic, I was broke by Sunday. I would get paid Friday, by Sunday I was broke. So when Monday came around, I needed to drink. Guess who put IOUs in the machine? I had a key. I knew the guy that had the key to the machine. We'd open that thing up and we'd put IOUs in there. Did that for years, okay? So 6 years goes by, I'm working at this job. And at the time, beer wasn't enough. So I had to bring in hot stuff. So I brought in a bottle of peppermint schnapps once, and I was cleaning my truck. And I pulled out that bottle of schnapps and I put it in my locker, and my boss seed me. So, guess who gets fired for drinking? Me. I got fired for drinking like 2 weeks later. And I said, thank you very much. Because I was making $3.85 an hour when I started. When I got fired, I was making $5.25 an hour. I said, thank you very much. See you later. Bye. So I left. I was, at the time, 23 years old. The next 3 years of my life is a blur after that. I was in a total blackout for 3 years. Poor me, poor me, poor me, and another drink. I was unemployable. I'd work for 2-3 months at a time, get a bunch of money together. Excuse me. Meanwhile, we had sued the guy that hit us, and I got like, I don't know, $50,000 or something like that. you know, and I blew most of that drinking and drugging. And thank God, my mom, God bless her soul, she, when I had like 15 grand left, she took it away from me and she hid it, so I couldn't find it. She didn't tell me what bank it was in, didn't tell me nothing. Kept pleading for her to give me that money. No, she wouldn't do it. And I found out why she didn't give me that money. Because she became a member of a group called Al-Anon. Okay? And I guess Al-Anon teaches, and I went to a few Al-Anon meetings, pretty cool. But Al-Anon taught her how to stop enabling me. Okay? So, you know, she was little things like locking the door at midnight. I was still living with her. I'm a, you know, 26-year-old man living with his mom, you know? Reminds me of my 34-year-old son that's living with me now. No, so she, so I'm 26 years old, I'm living with this girl. Of course, I had all kinds of hostages along this way, right? I took, girls were my hostages, okay? And one girl was just, was four or five, not just one, four or five. I was living with this one who had a license and didn't have a drinking problem. Well, she did after I left, but. And she was my hostage. I lived with her, and I drove her a car for 3 years, drunk all the time, and never got caught by the grace of God. But one night, something happened. I went to a BYOB, and she caught me in her car with another girl giving me something, and that was it. I got home, my clothes were on the grass, everything. She threw me out, and I said to myself, God, you gotta help me. I'm sick of living like this. And I called my mom. My mom called my brother. My brother came, got me, put me in his house. And my mother called me. She says, I get you in a rehab, and we're gonna bring you tomorrow morning. I says, okay. That morning came, I wasn't ready. I said, I needed to get drunk one more time. I don't know why, but I needed to get drunk one more time. So I snuck out of my brother's house before they could come get me. And I went out and proceeded to get hammered that night, got beat up. A lot of things happened to me that night. But my dad, the next morning, he picked me up at a good friend of mine's house, who was dead today because of alcoholism. And he says, okay, I told him I'm ready. So we thank God, because I was supposed to go to Lordship Beach, Maine, but I ended up going to a place in New Hampshire, Rochester, New Hampshire. And it was down a long road. It was a nice lake there, and it was right at the edge of that lake. I said, holy Toledo, this looks like a prison. So I'm driving down, and mind you, my father told me before we left for this ride, he says, you can drink on the way down if you want. They said you could be drunk. I said, no, I'm done. So when I got there, when I got to rehab, they took my parents aside, and they took me aside. And they said, they told my father that, my father didn't have much faith in me ever. His whole life, never had no faith in me. He told, the counselors told him that, excuse me, that, you know, you're gonna go say bye to your son and you're not gonna see him for 28 days. He's not gonna see anybody for 28 days. My father said, man, that kid's gonna hit the door and he's gonna run. He thought I was gonna run. But for some reason, when I asked God for help that night, I meant it. You know, I really wanted to stop drinking. I didn't wanna be like that anymore. I didn't wanna commit suicide. I was contemplating suicide all this time. I just didn't want to live like I was living anymore. I knew I had better in me than I was putting out, you know. So I said goodbye to my parents. they put me in rehab, and they said, well, since you're not drunk, we're only going to keep you in a detox for a couple days. And that's what they did. They put me in detox for a couple days. I was good to go. Met a nice lady there. I used to call her Ma. She was like in her 40s or 50s, and I was only 26. So I called her Mom, you know, and proceeded to, you know, it was a mixed boys and girls rehab. And I was a roommate with a pure breed Arapaho Indian. He had long jet black hair. I had long blonde hair. So we were like the two studs of the place, right? And there was girls all around us. There was two girls on this side, two girls across the hall, and two girls next door to us on this side. And one of the girls that was on this side was a stripper. And every time I walked by her house, she was at her room, she's naked in the room. So, and they told us at the beginning, they said, if we catch you having sex, you're out. So I didn't do nothing. I was a good boy. But my roommate was a different person. I caught him having sex with one of the girl that he was having sex with was married, He had her underneath the stairs, and I could hear her moaning and groaning, and I ran down there. I said, you're going to shut her up or put tape or something, because you're going to get caught. So anyway, yeah, it was a great experience. Like about two weeks into rehab, something happened to me. There was a couple of friends that I had made that were really close, and up to this point, I wasn't saying anything at the meeting. They had like group therapy. People would be getting a circle, and we'd have group therapy and stuff like that. And I wasn't saying nothing. Nobody was gonna hear nothing about this kid, and that was killing me inside. And for some reason, 2 weeks went into the program, and I just fell down and started crying. And then after that, I started sharing my experience in these groups. And then they couldn't shut me up. It was coming out. That's why when I heard Gabby the other night, and I heard a little bit about her story, and that made me feel good. You know, I get close to people in this program. I don't know why, it's God that does that to me. I care about a lot of y'all, whether you know it or not. I love everybody in this room, everybody. AA means a lot to me. You know, so I went through that 28-day program, I came home, and I went to my first meeting was that night, that Monday. I got home, I went up to this old gentleman, all dressed up, just like me now. He opened the door, I shake his hand, his name was Henry. He had like 45 years sobriety. I asked him, I said, can you be my sponsor? I wasn't even inside the door yet. Yeah, because that's what they told me to do. Actually, they suggested I do that, right? So I was willing to take any suggestion that anybody told me, because I didn't want to drink no more. And I felt pretty good, 28 days. But I was scared to come home, because everybody home drank. I get up to that meeting, and he told me to get in it wasn't set up like this. It was a big desk like this. And the guy, and it was a speaker meeting, but it was a big desk, and the seats were like this, bunch of seats, fold up chairs. And he said, "You go sit in the front. You shut up and don't say a thing. You don't know nothing." I said, "Yes, sir." And that's what I did for a year. I couldn't speak at that meeting. I couldn't chair. Like you're doing now, 30 days, 90 days. I don't know what you got. I couldn't do this till I was a year sober. I couldn't get up and talk, I couldn't do nothing. Because I didn't know nothing. I was young and dumb, and that's all I was young and dumb, and an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I listened, you know, my first sponsor, he said, I'm just gonna be your temporary sponsor till I find you somebody more your age. Because I can't keep getting phone calls from you 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, my wife ain't liking it and whatever. So he dumped me off on this other guy that was a little closer to my age, and he had 10 years sobriety. Al was his name, and he took me through the 12 steps of AA, and when I got to the fourth and fifth step, there was something that I just couldn't tell him, because I didn't dare to tell anybody some of the things that I did when I was drinking. It was life or death situations that I had been involved with in my life that I couldn't tell anybody. So when I read in the big book that says you don't have to tell them, you could tell somebody else, like a preacher. So I said, there you go. That was my answer. And I went and told my preacher. And years later, I met up with this guy, and I told him about it. I haven't told too many people. Not in Virginia, probably 2 or 3 people I've told this to. And I ain't gonna tell you anybody here tonight. But about years later, I met up with a guy that I was involved with. And I told him that I had told somebody. He said, you shouldn't even told him. That's what he told me. So I feared for my life for many years in this program. You know, and I lived in fear. But it was funny, because I was like 10 years sober, back home. And I just happened to sponsor this guy's son. And I didn't know that was his father at the time. Until he brought me to his house. He wanted me to meet his parents. And I met his parents, and I said, oh my God, I'm dead. I'm done. I thought that was it for me. But the guy forgave me for everything that I did. He forgave me and he pardoned me, and I was okay. So ever since then, I've been good. So I wasn't afraid. So I haven't lived in fear. I lived in fear for like 10 years in AA, and then I've been good ever since. The last 28 years, been good. 29 years, been good. And so, you know, I'm working the program back home, and there was only 2 meetings a week back home. So I started a few meetings back there. I started a meeting. They used to bring all the drunks to the hospital. You know, they used to bring him to the psych ward. So I said, well, let's start a meeting at the hospital. You know, since there's so many alcoholics in here, we'll just start. So we did. We started a meeting at the hospital. We set it up with New York, and we, boom. And we did that. We ended up having 7 meetings a week in town, you know. And there was a town next door called Gorham, New Hampshire. We started a meeting there, too, because there was alcoholics in Gorham, New Hampshire, too, that didn't have rides and stuff like that. Because when you get to AA, I was lucky. I had 3-4 cars. I wasn't worried about transportation. I had it. I just needed a license. And by the way, when I did get home, not to go back and forth, but when I did get home, I reapplied for my license, and they sent me back my license with my money. And they said, congratulations on your sobriety. I don't know how they found out, but they found out. Anyway, so, yeah, so, yeah, sorry to bounce around like that, but, you know, I've been in this program for a long time, and I've been trying to help others for, you know, for the past 30-plus years, and it's been a rocky road, you know. I got fired in AA. I lost my mom in AA. My mom, who saved my life, practically put me in that rehab, saved my life, you know, and, you know, God is what led me to AA, I believe. You know, when I got on my knees and I said, please help me, God, and he did. He put me right in this program, right in the middle of him. He is with all of us right here. He is in AA. He is AA. He guides us through everything. He's the one speaking right now, not me. It's him. He always speaks through me, my higher power, God. He speaks through me to try to help another alcoholic. I don't know how many speaker meetings I've done where people have come up to me after the meeting and said, oh man, I went through the same experience as you did and blah, blah. You know, which is great. That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here to hear. You know what I mean? If I don't hear that tonight, that's fine. Don't get disappointed over that. I'm good, you know? But, you know, sharing your experience, strength, and hope is key in this program, because when I was young in AA, speaker meetings like this is what drew me to AA, not open discussion meetings. Speaker meetings, hearing the horror stories that people that have been through in their lives, I didn't want that to happen to me. You know, they're yets. If you keep drinking, it'll probably happen to you, but you don't have to. You don't have to struggle and suffer and go through all that. All those isms, you don't have to do that. You don't have to drink till you're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. Like a lot of people in the program here, you know? So when I got here, my amends and the amends list was short. I didn't have a wife, kids, nothing. You know, everything was easy for me. It was learning how to live sober that was hard for me. Living, you know, I truly believe, I don't know if y'all are like me, but I truly believe that everything in this world happens for a reason. You know, it's God's plan, not mine, not yours, his. He planned everything. He planned to have me here tonight. He planned to have that guy not show up and have me here. There's a reason for that. So I don't argue that. I don't debate that. Debating's over. If you truly believe that God is in your heart and in your body, everything that happens, happens for a reason. And I truly believe that to this day. You know, I trudge the road to happy destiny. This is the fellowship of the Spirit. This fellowship right here, of the Spirit. It's not a church thing. It's a Spirit thing. It's the fellowship of God. You know what I mean? And we are all His children. And we all got to try to live like we are, following His direction. And that's what I try to do to this day, is try to live by His direction. And I'm going to as many meetings now as I did when I was first in AA. I used to go to 7 meetings a week, I'm doing 6. You know, because I got injured at work and I got time, so I'm doing it. You know, and I'm kind of loving it, you know what I mean? And I'm old enough to retire, but I don't really want to, but if that's the case, if that's what God wants, that's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna retire and I'm gonna enjoy the rest of my life. But I'm going to get a little bit more involved in AA, so I hope you guys are ready for that. I'm a very vigilant person. I believe in all the 12 steps, the 12 traditions is very important to me. You know, I see a lot of things. I'm very observant in AA. I see a lot of things that aren't done right, and you know, it bothers me. But I try to just let go and let God, because it's happening for a reason. It's teaching me something to have, you know, everything that bothers you, you got to look at you. I got to look at me if something's bothering me. It's not that guy that's bothering me, it's me that's bothering me. Why is that guy bothering me? There's a reason for that. You know, and I try to live my life like that. I talk to a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are like that. They're judgmental about alcoholics. Talking down to another alcoholic. That kills me when I hear that. But listen, when people talk to me about that, it goes in right here and it stays in there. I don't go talk to that guy about it. I don't talk that. I just, if people need to share stuff with me, I'll listen. But I ain't gonna go talk about it. That God don't want me to do that. He doesn't want us to talk about other alcoholics. He wants us to help each other. That's what this program is all about, helping another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. To try to be sane again. I was insane when I was drinking. Anybody who drinks, blackout drinker, and gets into a motor vehicle and drives, that's insane. I did that for 3 years straight. That's insane. You know? And I don't ever want to be that guy again. I was so bad to women when I was drinking, you wouldn't believe it. Most of the women, that was my biggest, I had to apologize to a million girls. Because I was a bad guy to girls. I would use women. That's what I did. You know? And I know so many beautiful girls here. It's unbelievable. You know, my heart's full with all you guys. And you'll never see that part of Rolly ever. And, you know, my dad, it was because of my dad I was like that. Because he always told me when I was little, and I'm not judging anybody here because I love you all, but he told me when I was a young boy, he said, you're going to marry a fat girl when you get older. That's what he told me. So guess what? I wasn't very nice to over-large women. Never. But, you know, that was a terrible thing. I was terrible. But I had to make amends to those girls. And most of them said, oh, we knew you were just kidding or just, you know, you drank too much or whatever. But I didn't care if they felt better. It made me feel better. I had to say it. You know what I mean? I had to say it to make me feel better. And so I made amends to all those girls, and I felt better. And a lot of the people that I made amends to, they said, oh, we didn't think you were that bad, because guess what? They were just as bad as me, if not worse. But it still made me feel better. And that's what I was taught. It doesn't matter if they don't feel good about it, as long as you feel good. And you do what you're supposed to do, then you're going to be okay. So in AA, there was a lot of rules. And I broke a lot of the rules. I'm no perfect alcoholic by any means. You know, they told me no relationships in the first year. Guess what? I picked up a girl in rehab. She moved into my house after she got out. And I lived with her for 3 months. Then she left me. Boom. I wanted to drink. That was the only time in 38 years I wanted to drink. But I didn't. I went to a bar, and the guy, the first bar I went to, the guy was my father's uncle, or cousin or something, gives me a Coke. Drink that, I go to the next one. It was a biker bar. I go to that one. The guy says, Rolly, I heard you got sober. Here's a Coke. So I said, okay, I drank that Coke. I went to one more bar, and it was my cousin that owned it, and I owed like a $400 tab at that bar, and which I had just paid for like 2 weeks before. And I went up to him, and he says, Rolly, he says, how you doing? He says, you still in the wagon? I says, I'm not on the wagon. I'm an alcoholic, and I can't drink. Another Coke. So that was the closest I ever came to drinking, because of a girl, okay? So so after that, I said, girls are out of the picture. So I went for a couple of years, and then I met my wife. And then, you know, everything was going good. I had made all my amends. I had a few resentments, but you know, nothing major. And then I get married, and I married a beautiful girl, and she was 9 years younger than me, and I'm still married to her to this day. You know, today she's an active alcoholic, and everybody asks me, why don't you leave her? That's a simple question to answer for me. God saved my life in the program. Why? I made a promise to God, April 8th, 1989, that I'll stay with her until death do us part. If you think I'm going to break that promise, not me. no matter how much suffering. I got you guys. I got AA. I can come to AA. I don't have to watch that happen all day, every day at my house. I can come here where the solution is. And I can share with you people what I'm going through. And you guys always have feedback for me, which is, I love it. You know. So, and I got an alcoholic son. I got both of my sons alcoholics. But I got one living with me now. He got thrown out of Florida at his girlfriend's house. So he's living with me, and I got his two sons living with me. So his two sons, they see both ends of the spectrum. They see Pepe goes to meetings all the time, and the father and mother and grandmother drink like fish. They see, so you know what I mean? They see both sides of the spectrum. Which way are they gonna take? That's in God's hands, not mine. You know, I can only show them the good. And I take them everywhere with me. As much as I can, you know what I mean? I take them to football games, I take them to baseball games, hockey games, where the wife goes to the bar and drinks, and I'm with the kids. So, you know, life is pretty good these days. Other than that, life is good for me, because I'm still sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, in this fellowship. I love this fellowship. It's done me nothing but good, you know. It's a long process, though, you know. I remember when I first was coming, I would hear guys come up and then say, I got 20 years sobriety. I said, how the heck do you do that? 20 years? I mean, I thought that was like a lifetime when I was 26, 7 years old. 20 years? How do you not drink for 20 years? You know, but I'll never forget my first sponsor telling me, he used to tell me, he says, one day at a time. He says, 1 minute at a time, 1 hour at a time. Whatever it takes, Rolly, just don't drink. So, you know, I wasn't too smart, and I said, you know, that's a good concept. I'm gonna grab that concept, and I'm gonna run with that concept. And that's what I did. You know, and one day at a time has brought me to this point in my life. I'm 65 years old. I was 26 when I got sober. And I'm 65 and I'm still sober. So, you know, they say you can't give away what you haven't got. Steve Roach told me last year that he said, Rolly, I think you finally got it. That's what he told me last year. He came to a speaker meeting that I spoke at. And I don't know if he must have just been joking at me, because I love Steve Roach to this day. I mean, he's great. He talks in the heart like me. I'm a guy, he quotes out of the Big Book a little bit more than I do. I love the Big Book, don't get me wrong, but I don't quote out of it. I'd rather talk from the heart to people. And but he likes to talk out of the Big Book, which is okay too. I love the last page, 164, is the best page in the Big Book for me. You know, join me in the fellowship of the Spirit as I trudge the road to happy destiny. That is it right there. That those two lines right there will make me cry every time. When I first read that, I cried for like 10 minutes, because that's what I'm doing. And you know what? And I talk to people, and you know, we diagnose a Big Book, we dissect it, and they said, what's trudging mean? And I said, you know, it's trudging. You're in mud, and you're trying to get there. And you know, sometimes that's what it is. It's a struggle sometimes. Some people that drink into their 30s, 40s, and 50s have been drinking a long time. It's hard to quit. It's hard to do. And I keep telling my son that, who's 34 years old, I said, the longer you keep going, the harder it is to quit. You know? I've been sober now almost three times as long as I drank. So, you know, this is my way of life now. Drinking is gone. It will never come back. By the grace of God, knock on wood. Is that wood? Yeah. Good.
Yes. But,
yeah, so 10 years ago, I was working, and work got real slow back home in New Hampshire. And my son was living here, and I said, why don't we move to Virginia? My wife said, yeah, sure. Man, she woke up in Virginia, okay? I sold my house. I got rid of everything in the house. She was drunk the whole time. I got rid of her pillow she used to sleep on the couch and everything. Sold everything. Threw her in the U-Haul and dragged her butt down here to Virginia. Probably a month later, she wow, we're in Virginia. Yeah, living there, you know what I mean? That's how bad she was. She is. And she was getting homesick. So my mom died in 2018, so we had to go back. 3 years later, we had to go back. My mom passed away. And, you know, I told her, I said, yeah, we're going to go back. I didn't want to go back, but my mom passed, so I went back. And she realized that there was nothing there for her. You know, her parents shut her off because she was an alcoholic. Everybody shut her off. So she got over that part of her life anyways. And me, I went back a few times, but that's it. My son got married a couple years ago. My youngest son, my baby, he's an alcoholic, but when I first moved here, he was in prison. Well, actually, not really prison. He was in like a county jail. He had to pay some fines, and he didn't want to pay the fine, so he went to jail instead. That's what they let you do in New Hampshire. You go to jail, pay for your fines. That's what he did. So about 4 or 5 years ago, he called me up. He said, "Dad," he said, "I'm in a lot of trouble." I said, "Why? What happened?" He said, "I pulled the loaded gun out of the party." I said, "Oh my God." I said, "Call Papa." "Call my father. You want to get out of trouble?" My father could, I could have murdered somebody and got away with it. That's how powerful my dad was. So he got him out of it. He got him 10 months in that same county jail that he was at when I moved here. But the good thing that happened to him is he got sober in jail. And he's been sober to this day. He does not drink no more. And I said, "You go to AA?" He said, "Nope, Dad." He said, "When I go to AA, they talk about drinking. And I don't want to hear that." So I said, "That's fine, Corey. As long as you don't drink, I'm good with that." So he's been sober like 5 years now. He bought a house. He got married. He's got two beautiful girls. He's doing great, you know? And I'm proud of him, you know? I'm very proud of him. He called me up, and he still tells me he loves me. 31 years old, you know? My oldest son, who's 34, never told me he loved me, ever. As much as I do for that kid, nope. But that's God's will, not mine. I'm not going to cry over that, you know what I mean? But, so we moved down here, and I went to a lot of meetings when I first got here, all over Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, Norfolk, Hampton, Newport News. I went all over the place. I wanted to find a good home group, you know what I mean? And I met a guy who, Vernon, you guys know Vernon. I met him down at Craddock Oasis. That guy changed my life. I mean, I've been sober 29 years when I moved here, and being around that guy changed my life. And you know, whenever I got a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. I got two home groups. I got a Friday night discussion meeting on Friday night, this night, but I'm here instead because you all asked me to speak, so here I am. And I got a Saturday morning, which is tomorrow morning at 9:30. It's a men's meeting, good old boys, great meeting. And so I got two home groups, and I got a sponsor, and he has a sponsor. But Vernon is the type of guy that I need in my life because he won't bullshit me. He'll tell me straight up. When I have a problem in AA around here, I call Vernon and he'll tell me it straight up. He won't beat around the bush. And that's what I like. I like men like that. Men that tell me what I need to know and what I need to do. That's what I needed in my life at the beginning, and I still need that today. I hate to say this, but I think AA is a little sugar-coated these days compared to when I got sober. You know, they suggested you do a few things, but it's just like jumping out of a parachute and I suggest you pull the ripcord. Mm-hmm. That's how I was told suggestions were, you know? So I did what they told me, and here I am. I'm still sober because of those old-timers back then, you know? And I'm here to tell you, if you're a young kid, you can get sober. You don't have to go any 10, 20 more years of drinking. You don't have to do it. You can get sober right now, today. Am I over the time yet?
You're all good, buddy.
8:43, it's getting close. He was my cue over there. Yeah, you know, like sponsoring people in Virginia, I talk to a lot of people in AA in Virginia. But there's not really much I can do about the people that drink till they're 40, 50 and have families and have financial issues and all that. I really can't help those people because I was never in their shoes. I was in the shoes of a young kid being an alcoholic with no wife, a lot of girlfriends, a lot of cars. That's what I'm, you know. If a young kid would come up to me today and ask me to sponsor him, I'd say, yes, I'll sponsor you because I can help you. I can't help a 50-year-old man who's been married, divorced three times, you know, I have nothing in common with him, except that I'm an alcoholic. I could probably help you with your drinking a little bit, but all the other stuff, a lot of people think that we're financial advisors and marital advisors, and, you know, they want us to help them with all their problems. We can't do that. The problem that helps you is quitting drinking. If you quit drinking, all that other stuff comes back, the promises that we read at the end of the meetings. That stuff all happens if you follow the directions in the book and you do the 12 steps. All that stuff comes back. You don't have to worry about that stuff. They told me don't even think of that stuff. That's what they told me, and I didn't. I didn't think about nothing. It just, you know, these miracles just started happening in my life. And sometimes you don't even realize the miracle till years later. You know? You say, wow, you know? Because at the beginning, I was so foggy that I couldn't even remember half the stuff that I did. I had to leave it to God to make amends to all the people that I hurt when I was in the blackout. I couldn't do it. I didn't even know who I hurt. I'm just lucky that I never ran anybody over or killed anybody. That was all God that did that, not me. You know, he saved me from a hopelessly state of mind and body. Because I've watched alcoholics die. I had a good friend, my wife, her best friend, my best friend, I worked with him for years. I watched him die from this disease. His liver was gone. He had sclerosis of the liver. They told him that they weren't going to give him another liver until he quit drinking. So we brought him home. We got a hospital bed. My wife went over there. We washed him. We took care of him. He got 30 days clean. I bought him a 30-day chip for my meeting. I gave it to him. The next day, he wanted to drink. And the man could barely walk, okay? He wanted to drink. And if I don't get him no beer, he's going to go get it himself. So I went and got him a six-pack. He drank two beers and died. So I've seen it, what alcohol can do to people that drink all the time. I've seen it. I've buried many people in this program. I've cried a lot in this program for people that are close to me that have passed on from drinking. So you don't have to go. You don't have to be that person. We don't have to be that way. We are all here for a reason. God put us in these chairs. God put us here. God put you here to see me. God put you here, Gabby. Spirit. He put us all here for a reason, to help, to go out there and try to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Plain and simple. And that's what I'm here for. And I'm glad, thanks for having me share my experiences and hope. I love all y'all, and I hope you all follow me in the spirit of the fellowship as we treasure the road to happy destiny. Thank you.